Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're ending our last theme, which was interviewing masters about what it's been like for them to be a master, what the gifts have been for them, what the challenges have been, and also what they feel like Reiki has to offer humanity. This time I'm still in Russia, and I'm able to interview Lena Zaminskaya, who lives here in Moscow, and she is a longtime Reiki student, and it'll be very interesting, I believe, to hear her story. So, Lena, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, my Reiki story is really quite long. I was in the first group receiving the first degree in Moscow. It was in 1990. And since that time, so my Reiki story begins. And,
mm-hmm.
Can
I just interrupt you for a moment?
Yes, right.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. So, in 1990, how did Reiki masters get here, and how did they find you? It just felt like Russia was a very far away country, in the sense that, you know, we only heard what we heard from our newspapers, which of course were not, I find out later, very mm-hmm. accurate. So I'm just wondering how this all happened and how you came to be in this Reiki class.
So I'm myself wondering. That was really a kind of a mystery to me. Also because what actually happened with me, my friend went to India and she fell ill there. And she was treated by a Russian person who received Reiki abroad,
mm-hmm.
and it really worked.
Wow.
She recovered, and when she came to Moscow, she told me about this,
mm-hmm.
Telling that it would be nice to invite some of the Reiki master here
mm-hmm.
in order to be taught how to treat, how to do Reiki, how to treat other people and ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at first I was very critical about that and skeptical about this, and I was doing some kind of psychotherapy at that time, and I thought that it's kind of a strange thing to be able to learn how to heal people with hands.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it so happened that one of our acquaintances really did managed to invite a Reiki master from Holland coming here to Moscow. And it happened to be your student, Volker Brink, who came, and me and my friend were the first interpreters who interpreted these first Reiki classes.
Wow.
And that was a kind of an explosion for Russian people. And the first groups of Reiki in Russia were large, like first like maybe 50 or 60 people in a first degree group.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Really, it worked wonderfully. To us, it seemed like a kind of a magic happening. Something magical happened, and people felt some strange experiences and strange sensations in the hands and so on and so forth. And I was really surprised.
That it worked?
That it worked. after that, we started practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And in a year, Volker Brink came again, and we received the second degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, me and my friend and
mm-hmm.
some other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was still even better for me because of the symbols and all stuff connected with these things working also. And again, the groups were large, and that was really a kind of a new opening for Russian people, for a kind of spiritual work inside and outside. And people were enthusiastic about that. And a little bit after that, we started thinking about what to do further. And we didn't think about being a master. Yet the work, some kind of large workshops that took place for those people who are thinking of becoming masters.
Mm-hmm.
Not just master candidate or something, but just thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the far future we'll do that. That was the kind of, as I can judge, a kind of self-assessment work,
mm-hmm.
which we did during those workshops. And later, Fok and some other students decided to invite Phyllis Frumoto to come to Russia. And she came to St. Petersburg, and that was my first meeting her there. And that was really, for me, it was a real event in my life, because I felt a very strong connection, and I decided that she will be my master if ever I receive a master's degree. And I wrote a letter to her, and starting from that time, my journey to mastery started. And I was lucky enough to receive my master's degree from her in 1995 in Holland. That was really great. And after that, I started immediately working as a master. I came to Moscow, and I have quite nice and quite full groups in Moscow and in some other cities. And at that time, there were not many masters in Russia, and that's why we have a lot of students. And though Reiki community was quite young in Moscow, and there were a lot of things happening there, and Reiki in the world was trying to find form, and Phyllis started to formulate what really the form of Reiki, the Usui system, should be. And we tried to also to somehow to find our ways in Russia with that. There were a lot of people who tried to interpret Reiki their way and to start their own trend, their own form of Reiki, and there was a lot of fighting against that, and a lot of struggle was at that time with that.
When you were going through that time, it seemed that this community that were wanting to be masters or were new masters, that you all knew each other, I suppose, from your classes.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to imagine this, because when I came, it was like this explosion, sort of Reiki here. And it seemed that all of you knew each other, and in some form or another. And it must have been quite stressful or challenging to have people kind of go off and do their own thing and not judge them, or maybe you did and you tried to bring them back. I mean, did those kind of things happen?
Yes, everything happened, and that was really partially painful process.
Mm-hmm.
People with all this kind of misunderstanding which started to develop within the Reiki community among the people who knew each other for a number of years. But at some point, an understanding came, at least to me, that it's better not to fight, but let the people do their own thing. Just to trust the process they are in and be in my own relations with Reiki. And for me, I always trusted this form which I received from my master. And I was, I am still quite comfortable with that. And a lot of years have passed, and I'm still curious about that, and I'm still on friendly terms and with this system which I received. And that's fine that other people try to find something else for themselves. I'm not judging any longer. But before I used to, and I tried to persuade other people to keep this system which I knew.
Were you ever successful in trying to convince them to do something different?
No. Frankly speaking,
no.
No. Well, that was frustrating from the start, but then I just stopped doing that.
Right. Well, you know what I think is that Reiki, I finally came to the point where I realized that we were dealing with healing and that as masters, we come across some of our greatest challenges. And sometimes when we come across our challenge, we end up trying to change the thing that actually brought us to the challenge in order to get rid of the challenge. And I think that that's not a judgment. I just see that that's happened a lot. And I don't know whether it's worked, actually, for them. But it's been an interesting human mechanism that I've watched. So I watch that in myself. Like if I run across something that I don't like, I try to change it rather than changing myself. And I think that's the nugget of the whole thing.
Yeah, quite right. Really.
And so I think some people really have to do the change outside of themselves in order to have the change happen inside. Somehow this is the way it is.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's difficult not to judge.
Yes. You know? Yeah. I agree. Totally.
Yes.
I think that a lot of stress is put on not judging. And I tell my students that every day we use our judgment to save our lives, like whether or not to cross the street at a certain time or whether to do something, and maybe if we follow our intuition, we stay out of harm's way, so to speak. So judgments aren't bad, it's just what we do with them. And if we make a separation between people, then, you know, that's not very beneficial. And yet sometimes separation does happen. So I'm wondering, in the beginning, was the Russian Reiki community fairly close,
yeah.
Very close, and then it began to fracture with all these changes?
It was also a very painful process, which I noticed several years ago, which started, I don't know why, I still don't have any explanation for that. Maybe it happened because the community grew gradually. There were a lot of masters whom we, the initial group, didn't know or wasn't acquainted with. And there were different people, and so gradually we stopped meeting, I mean, the master's community. There were groups who wanted to, during the master's meeting, wanted to do something else, not to communicate, just to have fun, to have good time, but to do so-called work. For some kind of reason, I don't know, but treat with Reiki this or treat that, some kind of processes in Russia. And I personally do not feel close to that, or I did not understand the purpose of that. And for me, the actual communication, heart-to-heart, between the members of the group, the masters, was precious, and I wanted this to be preserved. What I managed personally to do with this was just to preserve personal relations with some of my friends whom I still meet. But these are mainly just informal relations with some of the personalities, with people who are dear to me. But it's not the meeting of a master's community that it used to be in past times. And I have a feeling that through some reason, it's not maybe important, or it's not needed now for master's community here in Russian people. Probably I in a kind of absolutely different process, they are going through some period of time when they have to be by themselves, you know, not as a part of the community, but do something with Reiki, maybe in their everyday life. Start going to some kind of job, doing this job with the Reiki inside. Not necessarily teach Reiki, but do something else with Reiki. And that is really a very interesting challenge. I talked to some of my friends, and she said that she's working now in some kind of children's school for disabled people, disabled children, and she has to communicate with them, and she uses Reiki to do that. And that is very interesting. And she also used to teach before Reiki, and she can compare the way she did it before Reiki and after she became a master. These are two absolutely different things. And she says that Reiki teaches her to be tolerant, patient, treat these children with patience, not to be angry, not to be judgmental, and not to be too controlling. Which she used to do with her own children, by the way. And this is very interesting. Probably the same thing happens to some extent with me, because I also do some kind of psychological consulting people, and psychotherapy. I also do it absolutely in a different way that I used to do that before I received Reiki, before I became a Reiki master. That is also very interesting.
Can you describe the difference?
I'll try to. You know, before I felt absolutely responsible for everything I'm doing with people, as if I really can, according to my will, change some people's destiny or something like that, or the results that came after my treatment will be because I do something wrong or right. And that was a very stressful thing for me, you know, because I felt very responsible for everything that happens happened at that time. Now I do what I think I should do, and I try to find the way to a person's heart. And I discovered a very simple thing, that my task is to probably to help a person to find his or her way to being happy in life. And maybe this way does not correspond to my way.
Right.
But my task is just to help and to assist a person to use his or her own capacity to develop this ability and to enjoy life more than he or she used before.
Wow, beautiful. Yes.
And that is absolutely different thing that I used to do. I do not try to cure any kind of disease or neurosis or anything. You know, no.
Beautiful.
Yes. And I think this is the influence of Reiki, really. This kind of a thing which I discovered because I practiced and taught Reiki for quite a lot of time. This, I think.
Beautiful. When you were teaching and traveling, you went to different cities in Russia, or...
Yes, I used to, but now I do not do that. I don't know why. I have quite little groups consisting of one or two people. Mainly it happens in Moscow. But before that, I used to go to Ufa, mostly to Astrakhan, or some of the other Russian cities.
And how was that when you traveled? And you went there and you had students, and then you left. You didn't have, you know, they couldn't have daily contact with you.
No.
What was that like for you? Was that hard for you, difficult for you?
So I don't think so. I thought that my task as a Reiki master just to transfer this energy and to transfer this ability to receive and give Reiki. And I trusted that people will find their own ways with Reiki. The same as I did. Because I also didn't have the opportunity to meet my master every day.
Right.
And I thought that is quite natural for me to be on my own. For me it was fine, you know.
And did they, did the Russian students have expectations that you would keep in contact with them, or that you would continue to go back, or?
I think that they did, because I really continued coming back to those cities for several years running, like once or twice a year. I used to go to Ufa. And I met my students there at that time, but that was not often, you know. Maybe once or twice a year, that was okay for me. And that they expected, of course. And then I just stopped because I don't know why. The process had somehow stopped there. And other masters started going there. And my organizer became a master herself, a master herself. So she started having her own classes.
You've been able to travel some outside of Russia to other Reiki communities, and I'm wondering, do you have a sense about the differences between what culture can bring to Reiki and what the similarities are of practice, other than the hand positions? I think that I just wonder if in your judgment. We can use the J word. There are cultural aspects to the practice of Reiki.
It's difficult to say. You know, when I'm at the kind of workshop working, either helping as an interpreter or just being at other communities, I'm in Reiki environment.
Right.
And at that level, there is no difference. Except maybe language.
Uh-huh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, that's a good observation.
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered because, you know, when I travel around, I see or I feel, I think, for myself, these little differences, and they're very enriching for me, but I also see the similarities, which is this really amazing thing where we all become human beings, choosing the same path, so to speak.
As soon as we start treatments or talking in the circle, all differences disappear, it seems to me. Culture, I mean. Just people use other language. That's it.
And do you feel that the, as a master, that the community, now the values of the community have shifted from the early days?
At least in Russia, I think so, because being in contact with my friends who are Reiki masters for a long time and who belong to those early community, I don't think that their values changed much. But talking about new masters, maybe, though I don't know many of them.
What would you think that the things have changed?
It seems to me that they move, they try to move faster from one Reiki level to the other, like receiving very quickly the second degree after the first, and then becoming master, and then quickly start initiating masters themselves. And it seems to me that the process becomes a little bit more superfluous and less in-depth, less deep. Unfortunately. But maybe it's just a kind of a judgment. Of course, not everybody is like that.
Right.
Yeah, there are a lot of deep people.
Yes.
Who received the
right. Well, you know, it's been interesting for me to watch because our community started in 1980.
Yes.
And the same thing happened. Okay. So it's just like you're 10 years behind us.
Yes. Right.
So, so, you know, in 1990 and through the 1990s, this happened a lot. You know, that there was this kind of explosion of masters and people who didn't have much experience initiated masters and then tried to, and then they learned from that. I mean, we all learn from what we do, right?
Yes.
And I think one of the things that was so beautiful about that experience was that people very quickly learned that initiating a master was not so much fun. It was some work. And that there was a quality that they realized that they wanted to serve their students. Because I think for all of us, no matter how young or old we are, there's definitely a value of serving students. And, and there's some insight with people about how that goes. And sometimes you have to do it And not, and then find out, I wish I had had this before I did that. So then they stop and they wait and they reconsider. And perhaps this is happening here.
I myself used to have a master candidate of mine. And I was just relieved when she decided to wait for a long time and that she's not decided that she's not ready for that work. And I thought, oh, thank God. Because I didn't have a clue how soon I would initiate her.
Right, right.
No connection with that.
Though
I liked her and I still love her as a person and as a friend. And we spend a lot of time together, but now I'm relieved that I shouldn't teach her to be a master now, at least.
Do you have a sense about what that would take in you as a master to take that step?
I don't know, really. It seems to me probably I can initiate a person now if it's the right person for me. But there isn't any. No.
Yeah.
Maybe my requirement to a person being my student are different. I think that it that the person should have some experience in life and Reiki before becoming a master. Otherwise, I wouldn't feel on some stable and firm ground with this person, and wouldn't trust her or his process. And I can't see such a person really now. I thought that this master candidate of mine would be like that, but during this economical crisis, she was in such a difficult and wretched position with her business, but that I couldn't even imagine her becoming a master into the bargain. You know?
Why do you say that?
She was so preoccupied with her business things. And,
then there was no room.
No room for thinking of becoming a master.
So that's been put on hold, so to speak, for a while?
Yeah. And she's still in some kind of difficulty, predicament.
When the crash happened, were there lots of people in the same position?
Yeah, I think so.
And what was that like for people? It just seems like just a very short time ago you were in a very different economic system than we were. And it was, well, according to our newspapers, you were pointing fingers at nasty capitalism and saying that it was going to ruin the world, which it might have, actually. But at that point we were on the upswing. So we didn't see that. And I'm just wondering, it's come, capitalism, so to speak, has come to Russia. And you've kind of, now on that score, you've rushed, as we might say, it's a little pun, rushed through the process, and now you're at a crash again already. And I'm just wondering how that's been for people.
Well, for a number of people, it is, wasn't, it is a very tough time. And it was a kind of a depression, personal and economical, and everything. I have a lot of clients, psychotherapists, I should say, and not very many students as a Reiki master, unfortunately.
So do you think that, but in the kind of overall, I mean, this is totally off Reiki, but I'm interested, overall speaking, do you ever hear people say, well, we should go back to a kind of communistic kind of...
Well, there are some people, and they always happen to be, since the time the changes began, there were people who wanted to come back.
Uh-huh.
But not many of them.
Uh-huh.
Not many of them. Nobody would like to come back to this state.
The state of where you were.
Yeah.
And
there are a number of people who, younger generation who didn't know this state.
Yes, yes.
And they couldn't understand the difference at all.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It is. It's quite a different, turn of, so to say, history wheel, which turned, and that was absolutely final thing.
Yes. Mm. There's no way back.
No way back. Absolutely.
No way back, no. Although there are people who kind of always wish there will be. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So when it was like that, I'm just wondering, I have this feeling, you know, we always got these feelings of everything being suppressed. And if we can think about it in human spirit terms, it just felt like the way that things were run, that the human spirit was suppressed or pressed down. I'm wondering, is that really true, or was that something that was just a bit of propaganda?
During Soviet era?
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, it was in some places with some people, and there was a desperate attempts to go up and to receive at least some of the snatches of information, to grope to some kind of spiritual life, which was possible at that time, to get literature, to get teachers, to go abroad, to see other people, to see other life. And, you know, I was probably among those people. I started practicing yoga in spite of the fact that it was forbidden at that time, you know.
They forbid the practice of yoga?
Yes.
So because how did you get the literature? How did you even know about it?
I got acquainted with some people from Indian embassy who really taught me some of the things.
Wow.
And then gradually I find my ways to some. And then this was just during the beginning of this perestroika time. More and more people starting coming from India to teach different things in, within the Indian embassy. And I was lucky to have a very nice yoga teacher, an Indian person, staying in Russia.
Beautiful.
Yes. He stayed here for 3 years, and he had classes in cultural center in Indian embassy. And I went there. Yeah. And I read a lot of books since I knew language. I had the opportunity to get some books in English at least. I was kind of privileged in that respect to receive some more information about that.
And there was a whole... should we call it a whole underground of people that like a network in Moscow, for instance, in St. Petersburg, and in other big cities that were doing the same thing?
Yes, right. A lot of people who were interested in all kind of mystical things and esoteric things and other so-called evil practices like yoga or martial arts and everything. And that was a really very deep and large underground life, which we had. And that was very interesting also.
What was that like? Was it kind of exciting to be underground?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was. That was a kind of also a privilege to be unique. And to be courageous enough to go for it.
What would have been the punishment if somebody had cared and caught you?
You see, at my times when I was in that, it should be even some imprisonment, you know?
Really?
For those people who taught. For the teachers. For those who took the classes, I don't think it was too severe. For example, from time to time I worked as an interpreter and went abroad with sports teams. They might have forbidden me, forbidden to go abroad, for example.
Oh, I see. Right. Right.
And that was some kind of punishment for me. Because it was considered to be a privilege.
To be able to go abroad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Well, I guess the next question that just comes to mind, yes, which has, again, nothing to do with Reiki. Mm-hmm. So did any of your sports team people ever defect?
What?
Did they ever defect, the sports teams that you went for an interpreter? Did anybody ever stay outside of Russia?
Ah, that's what you mean. No.
I mean, we always have movies about people.
Yes, right, but not in my team.
I just wondered. I mean, sorry, my mind just goes all over.
Mm-hmm.
I had this great, one of my favorite movies is called Moscow on the Hudson. And it's with Robin Williams. And it is, I don't know how, you know, accurate it is or anything, but it's this story of this orchestra that comes to New York.
Yes.
And one of the guys in the orchestra is desperate to defect.
Yes.
But he ends up, he doesn't have the courage to do it, and he ends up seeing that he would miss his family and everything.
Yeah.
So he ends up not doing it. But this other guy, who always said, oh, don't do it, you'll regret it, it's no good, he ends up at the last minute defecting. And then, this crazy story, because how he defects is he ends up with this, well, let's say politically correct. How can I say this? This black American family.
Yeah.
The guy was a guard or something in this department store. And he ends up at this guard's house and seeking asylum and learning New York from this perspective. And it's a very funny movie. But, you know, I always think about that, how that was for people, and was it really so tempting, you know, to not come back home?
Maybe for some of the people it was, really.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you know, a friend of mine, she asked for political asylum in Denmark. She went there together with her son, and they stayed there. And she still lives there.
And she never regretted it.
As far as I know, she says that not. That she does not regret. But she is a very strong woman. She learned this Danish language, which is difficult.
Very difficult.
Yes. She sold her apartment in Moscow and went to the United States and took some course in psychotherapy and hypnosis. And she founded her own Erikson Hypnosis Institute in Denmark.
Wow.
Yes. And she's teaching there. And she is very famous as a psychotherapist in Denmark. Can you imagine that?
Imagine.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
By the way, she is also a Reiki student. Coming back to Reiki, she was initiated by Volker Brink as Master Yip.
But did she come back to Russia to take Reiki?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
She was
she
able?
She comes to Russia from time to time.
Yeah?
During our time now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She's still my friend and
very dear
friend. Actually, I went to visit her in Denmark. That was at the period when she had very hard times there, tough times. And I went there just to give her some support. Mm-hmm. And I have just received Reiki first degree from Foka. And I told her about that.
Uh-huh.
And I treated her and her husband.
Oh,
their
wonderful.
Danish husband with Reiki, who was, by the way, alcoholic at that time.
Uh-huh.
And after that, I helped her to find Annie Peterson.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and she received the first... her first and the second degree from Annie Peterson.
Oh, wonderful.
And then she came to Moscow and met Foka Brink.
Oh, wonderful.
And decided to become a master.
Now, that's a wonderful story.
Yeah. Yes.
Isn't it amazing how Reiki works?
Yes.
And how we all get led around.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So, you know, one of the things that always struck me when I come to Russia is that people are not afraid to travel to get what they want, it seems. Like Candy, in an interview that I did several weeks ago, she talked about when she first came here to Moscow to teach, that people would travel for days on the train just to come to this class. And she said that it was, for her, a mystical journey, that people would hear about it and they would just know that they were supposed to come, and that it was her job to somehow embrace them and to be able to accept this without... How did she put it? I don't remember. But without making... too big of a deal about it. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. this should be a normal thing, of course.
Yeah.
And of course, for us in the States, to have somebody travel across the country.
Vladivostok, for example.
Yeah, for example, to take Reiki would be fairly unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so common, and it's now even still common for people to come to my weekends and travel for, you know, for days on the train or fly. Now, you know, airplanes are much more accessible. So I'm just wondering, what do you think that is in the Russian people, that they're willing to travel for what they want in this area of spirituality, and something draws them?
Yes, kind of inner call. So
What is that inner call? Can you say more about that?
I myself felt that. You know, when I was about just to become a master, there was a kind of conflicting argument between my mind and between my feeling of this call.
Mm-hmm.
And at least I surrendered to this call, you know.
Uh-huh. So what was the argument about? Can you, do you want to share that?
That it's just that I never make money enough to pay my master's equivalent, that it's not possible for me. What would I do with this mastery? I should stop working. I cannot do my classes and so on and so forth. That's two major changes in my life and so on and so forth. That it's not for me, actually. I do not need this. All kind of really rubbish, so to say. As I now think about that. But before... that was quite good and sensible arguments for me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't explain why I needed really to become a master. From the point of my of view of my mind, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was very disturbing, very irritating. And I wanted just to stop this, to come back to my mind state again. But this inner calling didn't let me do that. And that made me to travel to Holland in order to receive it. And I received all the money I needed for that. Uh-huh. And that was really quite a mystical experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How the money came to me, just to be able to go there, to pay for myself, for my stay mm-hmm. there, to earn all the necessary sum and amount of money to pay my master's degree.
Mm-hmm. 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 Beautiful.
And that was a very strange feeling, you know, on one level, on the level of everyday life and usual life, I experienced all these arguments going on the surface of me. But inside I knew that it will happen all the same, in spite of all the worry which I have. It will take place.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
That was very, of course, shaky position to be in.
Yes.
And very unusual one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful that you listen to your heart and listen to yes. your calling.
And since that time, I really do not do anything without listening to myself deeply.
Mm.
I try to always do that. And sometimes I cannot explain why I do this and do not do that.
Right.
But I know that I should feel this being comfortable with doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And this feeling of being comfortable is for me a sign of going for it or not going
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great words of a master. Really. That's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For this time
with you.
It's my
pleasure.
Minutes.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful time.
Well, it's been a wonderful time. And listeners, thank you very much for being with Lena and I. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.